Good day. This is Mark Alberts from Microsoft, Developer Solutions Specialist in the Mid-Atlantic region. Also with me is Tom Austin from RedGate out of the UK. Today we are going to cover the topic of database DevOps and how you can leverage some of the joint tools that we have within the Microsoft and RedGate tool set to deliver continuous integration, continuous delivery, and DevOps across both your development and database pipelines. So with that, I'm going to introduce RedGate for those of you who are unfamiliar. RedGate is a Microsoft Gold Partner and has been a Gold Partner since the year 2001. They are the leading partner that we have here on the SQL Server tool side of things. They are used in approximately 91% of the Fortune 100, and they have over 800,000 users worldwide. For those of you who've been around the Microsoft Developer Tool Stack for a while, you may be familiar with the Team Edition for Database Professionals. Some of the technology that we used in that was actually licensed from RedGate. So this is a partnership that goes back, more than a decade for sure, and all the way back to the very beginning when RedGate started as a tools company. The focus of their tools is to extend the DevOps lifecycle to cover the SQL Server databases. And just to be specific about this is not a discussion for SQL on-prem or SQL Azure. This is a discussion of SQL in either the PaaS version or in the on-prem IaaS version. If you're a Visual Studio Enterprise subscriber, the best news for you all is it's now included, some of these tools that we'll be talking about. All you have to do is go to the installation process. Go to your data and storage and processing workload, or you can download as well from the Visual Studio Marketplace. If you're not a Visual Studio Enterprise customer today, then you can go download free trials from redgate.com, or certainly reach out to your Microsoft Tools representative and talk to them about getting a quote for Visual Studio Enterprise. Now is actually a great time to take a look at that if you haven't recently. We're running some programs before the end of our fiscal year here at the end of June that we'll talk about a little bit later. So whenever you're talking about DevOps and including, the database tools and DevOps, the first thing you need to think about is what is DevOps itself? Now, Donovan Brown, who's one of our coworkers here at Microsoft, has defined DevOps as the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to end users. We're going to dive into that a little bit, but when you get more specific into the Microsoft view of what DevOps is, it's really this outer loop of productivity that defines how fast you could take something from the planning phase, get it into development, test it, and get to your definition of done, release it into production, and then monitor and learn from it so that you could inform that next iteration of software. When you start getting into it, even a one level deeper than that, what you really see is DevOps is about removing waste from the life cycle, speeding your iterations on the life cycle, and really ensuring that you're maximizing for the delivery of value as opposed to maximizing for productivity at any individual part of the life cycle. In that way, you could think of DevOps really as the extension of the things that we learned over the last decade or so being agile developers, and taking that and including the operations folks in there and adding new tools and new parts of the process and new capabilities so that they can have that iterative deployment cycle and iterative monitoring cycle and feedback into the developer planning phase so that you can maximize that delivery of value. Now, the question though is, why should you care about DevOps? Why would you want to adopt it? And when you go look at reports such as the 2016 State of DevOps report, what you find is that teams that can actually perform in a DevOps way are going to deploy orders of magnitude faster. They're going to be a couple orders of magnitude more frequently. They're going to recover from failure faster. And they're going to be able to be more responsive to the business. But probably most key to it is the fact that because they're spending less time on unplanned work and rework, they're able to spend more time actually delivering the core functionality that the business requires. So if you start thinking about what's going on from an industry perspective these days, what you're seeing are more and more companies like Uber, like Airbnb, we could go on and on the list, where you have outsiders coming in and disrupting existing industries. The teams that have adopted DevOps principles and who are able to spend 29% more of their time on new work means that they're able to differentiate themselves in a technological way at the same rate as those people who are coming in and trying to disrupt their industry. That means that from an end business perspective, they're going to be more resilient in those changing business environments, and they're going to be more able to compete. So at what you're really thinking about then is faster delivery of features and functionality. You're thinking about, as we talked about, resiliency in the face of changing business requirements. And believe me, if an Uber enters your industry, you're going to have changing business requirements really quickly. But you're also talking about reducing deployment failures and time to recover. We have a lot of great customer success stories that talk about DevOps, but I want to highlight this one in particular just for a second because it's talking about developer productivity. And I think it's worthwhile thinking about what the role of developers and developer productivity is in the DevOps cycle. Because after all, we just defined it as the extension of agile practices across to the operations guys. You would think that most of the focus would have to be on the operations. But when you really think about what DevOps does and taking agile across the enterprise, what you're really doing is you're defining how quick your delivery schedule is. What you're not defining is how much stuff you can deliver in each one of those chunks of delivery time. Now, for me, I tend to think in analogy. So the analogy I tend to think of when I'm thinking of what the inner loop of productivity that developers provide does is I think of it like a train. You think of that outer loop that defines that life cycle from I have an idea to now I'm going to dev and test it. Now I'm going to deliver it to a release backlog. Now I'm going to deploy it and I'm going to monitor and learn from that. That's going to be a fixed length iteration because that's, after all, part of the agile process. That's sort of like how often does the train come to the station? But in order to determine what's going to be delivered to that deployment backlog and what's going to be delivered into production, that's a question of how many people you could fit on that train in the first place. So really where that gets governed in the DevOps lifecycle is by how efficient you can make your developers, how efficient you can make your testers, and as Tom will talk about, how efficient you can make your database professionals. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Tom Austin, and he's going to take you through the DevOps lifecycle for databases. Tom?
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. And that was a great introduction. I really love that analogy around the train. I think that's brilliant. Yes, there historically, I guess, has been a slight disconnect between the application and the database. Often I work with organizations that are very proud of the journey that they've taken towards the implementation of DevOps. And when I ask them about, how do they deal with their database, the room goes very quiet and people say, we haven't tackled that problem just yet. And there are reasons why this is true, but why should we actually make sure that we consider the database as part of this process? Well, off the back of the State of DevOps report that Mark referred to a few moments ago, Redgate actually conducted their own State of Database DevOps report. And that showed us overwhelmingly that the database-centric customers that we deal with on a day-to-day basis are really, really focusing in on this area. 80% of the people that we spoke to will adopt DevOps, and they want to include the database in that. The biggest driver, of course, is increasing speed of delivery of those database changes so that they can be aligned with the changes that are being deployed on the application side. And actually, what's a really interesting point I think to make is that of all of the people that we spoke to, 75% of them had developers in their team who were actually working across both the applications and the database. So, these people have already seen the value that's been able to be delivered from this DevOps approach in some cases, but they know that the database is slowing down their ability to deliver that value forward. So, When we defined DevOps, when Mark gave us that definition from Donovan, we drew out three key parts: people, process, and products. So how do these map to a typical application automated deployment pipeline? Well, the process that we follow is relatively clear, you know, source control, continuous integration, and release management. The people that are involved are also relatively clear. We have our developers who are committing code into the source control repository, which feeds this entire process, this delivery mechanism to produce that value. And when we think about the database side of things, we don't actually have to change this very much. All we need to do is incorporate those people that are specifically focused on the database side of the puzzle and use the exact same process that we are familiar with. So source control, continuous integration, and release management tools applied in the exact same way across the application and the database. Now, the only thing that we haven't mentioned here, of course, is the products. And today, what we're going to be focusing on is using Visual Studio, Visual Studio Team Services, and TFS, if you would like to actually enable this process for the database as well as the application. Now, I mentioned why people are hesitant to adopt this, and there must be reasons why people have left the database out of this before. Historically, DevOps was seen as an application-centric approach. Everything that was spoken about was focused around the application, and so it was very easy to start there. The tools processes are also focused on the application. And of course, the biggest one for me is that application code really does lend itself to DevOps in that you can throw something away and stand up a fresh one as quickly as you like. Unfortunately, with databases, you can't just throw away the database and start with a fresh one. You have to maintain what's already there. And so actually, the database becomes this slightly more difficult thing to handle. It becomes more worrying to make changes in the same way to the database, because you have schema changes that you need to make, but you need to preserve the existing data. You have reference data, static data, lookup data that needs to be similar across environments versus the production data that has to remain where it's meant to be. Teamwork and testing are also part of this. Database drift, there's so many complications that people pull out and worry about when they start thinking about how they change their database. And so first of all, before we look at the tooling that we have available within Visual Studio, what I'd like to do is just mention a couple of points around the different approaches that people can take to handling data exchange. If we want to take a V1 of our database and move it to V2, how can we do that? Well, the first approach that we could take is what we might call a state-based approach. And this is where we focus really on the versions that are there at a particular point in time. So V1 and V2 in this case, the state of the database before and after we've made the change. And if we capture that information and source control that information, then later on when it comes to deployment, we can dynamically generate a change script that will allow us to work out how to get from one to the other. And this is the approach that you might see typically in SSDT or, of course, Redgate's own SQL source control product. However, with this approach, there are problems, there are complications, there are things that you have to be aware of. You really need to understand your tool. The deployment script that's going to be run to deploy your changes is actually only produced right at the last moment before that deployment takes place. And so you have no visibility exactly what that script's going to be like, what it's going to contain, how it's going to handle the change, until the point that you actually need to run it. So you need to be aware of the difficulties that your technology has in working out how to get from one state to the next, and you have to be able to have a backup plan. You have to know, okay, as I'm making this particularly complex change, how am I going to get around this issue? And of course, all the time testing to make sure that the scripts that you're going to produce aren't going to lose any of your data. alternative approach to the state-based approach adds some ability which enables us to do much, much more than just the basics that we see listed here in the table for changes that are possible with a state-based approach. And that alternative is to actually use migrations. So rather than concerning ourselves with that V1 and V2, the before and after states, what we focus on is actually how do we get from V1 to V2. So what are the individual steps that we must take to actually make the change that we wish to make? And so rather than capturing the state at those points, what we actually capture are the incremental change scripts that make up the path to that new version 2. And by source controlling these, when it comes to deployment time, we can just piece these together into one big script that handles that entire change in exactly the way that we have defined it. So just as the developers intended the change to be made is actually how it's going to be deployed when it comes to pushing this out to testing, staging, or perhaps even to production. And this means that actually a lot of those complications that we see with the state-based approach go away. We now have the flexibility and the ability to form our own change scripts that handle the complex nature of the change that we're trying to make. And so all of these things that we see on the list here become a reality. But of course, with anything, there's a positive and a negative. So what's the downside of using this other approach? Well, when you use incremental migration scripts, the order in which you run them becomes incredibly important. You can't do things out of order because one migration has to follow the one that it was intended to. Otherwise, the state of your database once deployed will not match that of the intended state by the development team. It can also become difficult to see object-level history. And this is because with the state-based model, you have a file that represents each object within your database. And as you've captured the state of it over time, you can very easily look back and see what it looked like yesterday, what it looked like last month, for the last deployment, so on and so forth. With migration scripts, they can touch many objects within the database. And so the only way to really see which ones are involved would be to look at each individual migration script and see what it has an effect upon. And the final concern that I'd like to draw out here are long deployment scripts. We can see a whole series of incremental migration scripts on the screen here. If we were to make the same or change the same stored procedure in 20 different ways over the course of all of these migration scripts, when it comes to deployment time, we're going to go through those 20 different versions of the same stored procedure before that deployment completes. So given these two options, what is the industry, what do people think is the best? Well, there's differing views. Gert Dreyfus here said, as soon as you have multiple changes on a single aspect of an object, ordering and the ability to detect which change needs to be made gets very complicated. But in opposition to that, Paul Stavell says, there's nothing more reliable than keeping track of exactly the scripts you intend to run and running them without trying to compare the state and guess. So if we speak specifically about DevOps, which approach should we use? Well, I would suggest that actually the second approach of the migrations-based approach lends itself more naturally to DevOps. And that's because one of the key principles of DevOps is this idea of shifting left. And so by allowing our development team to take over the responsibility of concerning themselves with how the changes that they're making are actually going to be deployed when it comes to testing, staging, and production, we have shifted responsibility left, and we've got much more clarity over the exact changes that are going to be executed. And this is the approach that ReadyRoll takes at its core. What ReadyRoll is at its core is a migrations first source control and deployment tool. And so with that, I'd like to show you this tool within Visual Studio so that you can see how actually you can use this technology with Visual Studio 2017 Enterprise to start capturing these migration scripts and running them through your automated pipeline. So I'm just going to switch over to my virtual machine here. And I've got a couple of things already configured. So here you can see I have a release definition within TFS with four different environments: integration, testing, acceptance, and finally a production environment. And this release definition allows me to deploy any new versions of my database code through this change. And we'll take a look at the definition of this in a little bit more detail shortly. Before we get to release our code, of course, we want to go through an automated build process. We saw continuous integration on the diagram, so I also have an automated build definition here for our database, and we'll see this running as part of the demonstration also. And then, of course, we need the source for this automated build process to run. So if I open up Visual Studio, what you'll see here is I've already got a solution open with a ReadyRoll project as part of it. And here within this ReadyRoll project, you can see these individual migration scripts, which has been added through previous changes that I've deployed to my various different environments. Now, the databases that we're working with today are these Voice of the DBA databases. So you can see I have a collection of databases to represent those environments that we saw in our release management setup. So we have Voice of the DBA Dev, Voice of the DBA Integration, Testing, Acceptance, and Production. Now, the Voice of the DBA app is really an app for making articles available for people to consume, and as we have prices for the various articles that people can come along and purchase. So if we look within our production database here, we have this article prices table. And if I just show you the data from this table, you'll see it has references to the various articles within our database and the price that they're being sold for. So the situation that I'd like you to imagine for this demonstration is that actually we want to start selling our articles to individuals in various different geographic regions. And rather than only offering a price in one single currency, we'd actually like to be able to change our pricing dependent on the region that we're selling the article to. And so instead of just this single price column, what I'd like to have is additional price columns that represent perhaps the price in Great British pounds for those people in the UK that would like to consume our material. So to do that, of course, I'm going to have to add this new column to hold that value in British pounds. So let's head back to our development database and find our article prices table. And I'm going to open up the designer. And so I'm going to add this new column, which is going to be of money type, exactly the same as the existing price column that we have within this particular table. Right at the end here, price GBP, price in Great British pounds, and then add on here that this is of money data type. So now that I've added this within the designer, I can click update, and when the preview database updates window appears, I can click generate script. And what you'll notice is when I click generate script, this is where the ReadyRoll technology takes over to capture this particular change and produce for us a suggested change script. So this has added a brand new script, migration script, to our project over here in the Voice of the DBA project. And it's actually numerically ordered this for me so that we can be sure that these scripts will run in the correct order when it comes to deployment. So the first thing I'm going to do is I like a bit more visibility over the changes that I'm making. So rather than this name that's been suggested for me, I'm going to actually change the name of this to added price GBP. And now I'll be able to look back and see exactly what this migration script is intended to do. We can see here that the comparison engine in the background has kicked in and suggested for us a migration script that would make this change for us. It looks pretty good to me, so I'm going to click to deploy this project to update our development database. And once that's completed, we should now be able to come in, take a look at the table, and we have, of course, our new price GBP column. But what we don't have is any values. We don't have any prices for our British customers to pay. So what we want to do here is actually, as part of this deployment, seed this price GBP column with some sensible values so that all as part of one deployment, we can actually start opening up this functionality and delivering that value out to our customers. Now, to do this, because of the way that ReadyRoll works, all I actually really need to do is append the information to this migration script that's going to handle this particular deployment. So here I can just say I want to update our article prices table. You'll notice this product popping up. This is SQL Prompt. A version of SQL Prompt is also included in Visual Studio Enterprise 2017, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. So I'm going to update the article prices table and set our price in GBP equal to the price that we currently have in US dollars multiplied by the current exchange rate, so 0.8. And so I can actually now execute this piece of code, and I can save this script, and that script is now part of my project within this Voice of the DBA project within my Voice of the DBA solution. So when we commit these changes to source control, these are the migration scripts that are going to be picked up and used to hand this deployment out target environments. So let's take a look at how this is actually going to happen. If I switch back over and take a look at the database build, first of all, the thing that you'll notice in here is that this is just a standard Visual Studio build, just building of the solution. We have added some additional MS build arguments in here to enable the ReadyRoll technology to pick up on those new migration scripts that are available within our project and produce for us our deployment script as the output from this build process. So let's go and commit these changes into source control and see this kick off. So I'm going to add my comment, added price GBP, and check these in. So once this commit is completed, we can now switch over back into TFS or VSTS if you prefer, and we can see that this build is now in progress. And what's interesting is once this build's completed, we've got this configured to automatically start deploying this new version to our integration environment. So here, what we'll see in a moment is a new release will appear, and you'll see the deployment start to that integration environment, all as a result of me committing those changes into the source control repository. Now, of course, whilst the build is running, we can take a look at the logs and see exactly what's going on in the background. But believe me, showing a scrolling page of text is not that interesting on a demo. So when you get your hand this and try it for yourself, you'll be able to see exactly all of the inner workings of what's going on. But what you can see down here as a result of that build running is that it's detected that this migration added price GBP needs to run. It's detected that that amends the article prices change, article prices table. And as I said, it started the deployment of that new version. In fact, it's now completed the deployment of that new version to our integration environment. And if I take a look at this particular release, then there's even more visibility available to me. So here I can actually go onto the database diff report, and this will give me a visual representation of exactly what has changed as part of this deployment. So here we can see a modification to our article prices table with that new price GBP column. We can see any warnings that the tool's picked up on, and we can actually see the actual deployment script that was put together to run this deployment. And actually, if we scroll down in here, what you'll see is when it gets to the incremental migration scripts, we have in there the alteration of our article prices table with the new column and that additional bit of logic that we added to actually take care of updating the prices in that new column based upon the value that's currently in our US dollar price column. So as a result of this, if we come back into the Object Explorer in Visual Studio and take a look at our integration environment, we'll see now that in our article prices table, we have that new column and those data values have been calculated for us, all as part of the same deployment. Now, I didn't show you the integration environment previously, only the production environment. So if you remember, if we come down here and take a look at article prices, we can see that this was empty. But I can now use VSTS or TFS as part of my release management workflow to actually take this release and promote it to any environment that I wish to. So I can go and grab this and push this up to production. And that's how easy it is to capture those database migrations, build them automatically as part of your automated build process, and then start deploying these changes out to your target environments. Now, the ReadyRoll technology doesn't stop there, so there is more that I would like to show you, but just before we do so, now that that deployment succeeded in our production environment, let's go and reassure ourselves that actually that has happened as we expect it to. So I'll close down all of these previous windows, go back into our production database, and open up that article prices table again, and we can see that production deployment has taken place with those values inserted. So I mentioned that there was more to the ReadyRoll tools. There's more available within this particular version. And actually what I mean by this is, do you remember when we mentioned the various limitations of a migrations-based approach? Well, actually, ReadyRoll is available in a professional edition that takes care of many of those limitations for you. So if you choose to work with ReadyRoll Pro rather than the basic ReadyRoll Core version, then actually you can enable a whole bunch of different features that make those issues go away. Things like programmable objects, things like static data, things like the fancy diff report that we saw there as part of that deployment process, giving us real visibility on exactly what's going to change. So to enable some of these features, all we need to do is actually amend the options within the project. So if I come into the Solution Explorer, right-click on my project and choose Properties, you'll see here we have some options available to us to turn on the online schema model. And what this does is give me actually a state-based representation of the tables that I've been working with. So all of a sudden, I can actually compare these files historically and see that object-level history that we thought we might miss out on if we used a migrations-based approach. We can also see that we have the ability to import our programmable objects into separate individual script files rather than into incremental migration scripts. And this means that, again, we'll use the state-based approach for deploying objects where actually migrations are less useful. So for stored procedures and views and things like that, we only want the last version of it. We don't want to go through the entire chain of changes. So by turning on this feature in the professional version, we can actually import these items into our project, and those then are used for the actual deployment of these out to our target environments. So there is much, 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 much more available with the ReadyRoll tool. And we can take a lot of those things that worry people about a migration-based approach and make them go away. So with that, let's switch back to the slide deck for a moment, and let me talk to you a little bit about the versions of Visual Studio, SQL Server, and VSTS TFS that are supported. You can see actually from the screen here that we do support very early SQL Server versions. If some of you are still working with SQL Server 2005, I'm sorry, but we will actually allow you to continue to. I know I'm sure that many of you wish you could get to a more recent version. As with regard to the extension, you'll see again that we support all of the latest versions of TFS and, of course, Visual Studio Team Services as well. And actually, ReadyRoll is available with any version of Visual Studio greater than 2015, as long as you have SSDT installed. Now, I've shown you a glimpse of some of the Redgate technology today as part of this demonstration. But as we mentioned right at the beginning, DevOps is more than just tooling. So it's more than just products that you put into the picture to enable the process to take place and facilitate the interaction of those people that we discussed. And Redgate does offer tooling around the wider scope of DevOps. We've looked largely today from development through build, packaging, releasing. There's some discussions that we could have around testing as well. Mark, I know that you are quite keen on talking about Visual Studio unit testing capabilities.
Yes, absolutely. I was just thinking about that. If you're running live unit testing in Visual Studio Enterprise and there's a database change on the back end that would cause one of your unit tests to fail, you actually should be able to see that live in Visual Studio Enterprise 2017.
It's fantastic. So, I mean, we really have given you just a glimpse of the technologies that are available to make the adoption of DevOps across both your application and your database easier. If you're interested in that wider collection of tools, then I have some more great news for you. So, Visual Studio Enterprise subscribers can actually claim additional 10% discount on the Redgate Eagle. Redgate Toolbelt contains 15 tools altogether, and they make you more productive, your team more agile, and all the time keeping your data safe. And Mark, I think you have a promotion to talk about as well.
The bottom line, folks, is that we do have a promotion. I mentioned it a little bit earlier. This is for volume licensed customers on enterprise agreements. It is available through a business desk exception, but it does provide a tremendous discount for customers compared to the normal step up price. So if you have Visual Studio Pro and would like to step up to Visual Studio Enterprise, or if you need to purchase net new Visual Studio Enterprise and you need $50,000 worth or 50 seats or more, then definitely reach out to me. Or if you know who your current Microsoft Tools representative is or your reseller, reach out to them and they will find us, and we'll be more than happy to work with you and make sure that you can acquire this technology at the lowest possible cost. Additionally, if you have Visual Studio Enterprise already, definitely download and try the ReadyRoll Core and the SQL Prompt Core tools. And then the Pro tools are available with a free trial on there. And of course, Tom and the rest of the Redgate team are here to help us if you have additional questions around the capabilities or how to acquire it. So
Most definitely.
with that, Tom, if I don't know if you want to add anything before we wrap up and move to questions.
I think that was a great summary there. Yeah, I mean, we're more than happy to help wherever we can, so please do get in touch.
Great. I do see we had one question in the conversation about support for Oracle. So this is SQL only. But definitely want to encourage you if anyone else has questions to either come off mute or to ask your questions in the IM window, and we'll be happy to address those here. We do have about 20 more minutes here before Tom and I have to go move on to other things, so we're more than happy to stick around. But with that, I'm going to wrap up the recording for now, and we can move on to live questions if people are a little bit shy about being recorded. So thanks, everyone.
Tom, there is.